environment.
Welcome back to another return episode. It's the Revenge of the Air Environment. She's the environmental scientist, Aaron Schott.
And he's the urban pastor, Jamin Bradley. I got your name right.
And I'll be playing the part of you, dear listener, today. As Aaron is about to hop into something that she says takes a lot of explanation. So I'll be the person that just goes like, yeah, okay, explain that a bit more. And so you, the listener, can be like, oh, thank God that he's here.
Yeah, I mean, there will be a conversation towards the end where Jamin gets to actively engage in what I'm talking about. But there's a little background that needs to be had beforehand.
Great. I'm ready for your half hour of pure talking. Go.
I love to hear myself talk, so that works well for me. So... Jamin, have you heard of the phrase 30 by 30?
Yeah, it's kind of like a 2x4, but way bigger, right?
Yeah, really big piece of wood, but also it is a global initiative for right. governments.
Oh, yeah, that one, right, that 30.
Yeah, that one. They're trying to protect 30% of the world's land and oceans by 2030. So specifically by designating them as protected areas. So this idea was originally proposed in like a 2019 paper called A Global Deal for Nature, Guiding Principles, Milestones, and Targets.
Right, that's exactly what I was going to say had I explained it.
Yeah, exactly. I knew that you knew. I knew that was a bit. So
oh, yeah, totally. Sure, yeah.
Right. Totally a bit. Mm-hmm. Within this paper, which I will not read to you because it's 17 pages and that's ridiculous, but the authors develop a plan called the Global Deal for Nature, in which 30 by 30 is part of, but they say an additional 20% of the earth is managed sustainably, so it's like 50% totally. So it's like the Global Deal for Nature is a time-bound, science-driven plan to save diversity and abundance of life on earth. Pairing the Global Deal for Nature and the Paris Climate Agreement would avoid catastrophic climate change, conserve species, secure essential ecosystem services, and finding new ways to give urgency to this union. Less than half of the terrestrial realm is intact, yet conserving all native ecosystems, coupled with energy transition members, would allow us to remain below the required 1.5 Celsius rise in average global temperature. That's just like part of the abstract. So it's a bit more like essentially preserve 30 of the world's ocean and land by 2030.
30%, right? That what you said?
30%.
And we're the terrestrials in this case, correct?
Yes, I breathe water. I mean air.
So extraterrestrials are beyond Earth.
They're beyond, because it's extra. They're extra. We're just the regular terrestrials.
But if we went to their planet, they would be the terrestrials.
Right, and we'd be the extra.
You got to think about this. Yeah, that's deep.
Oh, wow. You're really diving in there.
Yeah, let's keep following this. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, yeah, let's follow that route.
We came to talk about something else. We're on aliens now.
After the publication in 2019 of this paper by E. Dinerstein et al., there's a bunch of people, particularly the 30 by 30 section of it, there was much more to it, but that part gained a lot of traction in 2020. It was initially championed by, I think, 8 nations, but then championed through something called the High Ambition Coalition for Nature and People, which is essentially just an informal group of countries that participate in the UN Climate COP. Currently, over 90 countries participate in it, including the UK, where I live, and as of April 2022, the United States.
Woo, yeah, we did it.
Yay, we did it. So, due to this initial push, initially 50 nations, 50, agreed to adopt 30 by 30 in January of 2021. And by October 2022, it had more than 100 countries committed to the concept. I will say that the U.S. launched their 30 by 30 like thing under the name of America the Beautiful Initiative in April 2022. I don't know if you've heard about it.
I've heard the song.
Yeah. So I think they've taken
they
that
made a whole theme song for it and everything.
They
yeah, it's crazy.
Applied it.
It's our greatest
hits. It's a
hits.
Lovely song. Yeah. It's our great, America's greatest hits. That's so funny. So, yeah, it's called the America the Beautiful Initiative. Like, where I live in the UK, it's complicated by, like, laws of devolution, essentially. But I can say that Scotland is also currently working on a piece of 20 by 30 legislation right now. So all of that background is to say we're still not there yet. That in December of 2022, all the countries that are a part of the Conference of Parties for Biological Diversity, which is COP15, and they call it the CBD, which is the Convention for Biological Diversity.
That's something else here in America.
When we have internal meetings, we do have to clarify at the beginning, this is not what you think it is. It's we're talking about biodiversity.
Right.
So of this COP for the biodiversity, there's only four nations that are not party to it. So for instance, like the climate COPs, which are 26, they happen every year. The biodiversity COP happens once every 10 years, but now they've moved it to every two. So they've been we're in a biological biodiversity crisis, so we've made these more frequent as well. But of the four nations,
sorry, you keep adding COP to the end of things, and I just keep imagining biodiversity COP, the movie.
Yeah. Like Charlie's Angels, but for animals.
Right.
That's my whole life. That's every time there's a little mouse and like a squirrel. Stop it.
This is called Zootopia. It already exists.
Or, you know, was it the Rescuers?
Rescue Rangers? No. Down Under?
Rescue Rangers. Rescuers Down Under, different thing. Rescue Rangers were like Chippendale Rescue Rangers, right?
Oh,
they're
right,
like,
right.
They're like Charlie's Angels, but for animals.
Okay.
All of that to say is that background in December of 2022, there was this COP15, which I will refer to it as that. It's the biodiversity COP. Only four nations are non-parties. Those are Andorra, Iraq, Somalia, and the United States. It's essential to point that out. They're not, unlike the climate COP, when we sign on to that, we have to follow it. That's because Congress has said, yes, we will follow this. States have ratified it. Like, this is something that we've decided to do. We have not done the same with the biodiversity COP for whatever reason in the U.S. I could not find a reason. It's just Congress has not decided to sign on to it.
America!
Yay!
We're beautiful.
It's beautiful, and our government is complicated.
They get along every... Never mind. Forget it. Move on.
We do try to take part in the process, but because we're not signed on to it, we don't make a big deal out of it. So they signed on to a 30 by 30 initiative, which is an agreement currently in what's called Target 3 of the Global Biodiversity Framework. There's 23 targets. This is the third target.
Which one's the third target?
The 30 by 30 is the third target.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a thing within the 30 by 30. Climate COP or something.
No, the climate COP. Aha, I see what's happening. So there's something called the Conference of Parties. So you're aware of this. So there's the Climate Conference of Parties. These take place within the UN, and then there's the Biodiversity Conference of Parties. The Climate Conference of Parties, which is where we had the Paris Agreement and where COP26 took place in Glasgow in 2021, which I got to attend, that specifically is global legislation relating to climate change. So it's mostly about carbon offsets, climate change, like damage, all of this stuff that they're talking about. So that's the big, when we signed on to the Paris Agreement, it was like, we're hitting these targets for carbon releases and all of that. The biodiversity one is more talking about how do we preserve habitats? How do we stop drivers of biodiversity loss, which include climate change, but also include, I have this in my notes because I am a good person. They include direct exploitation of the organisms, pollution, invasive non-native species, land use change, all of that stuff that is more involved with biodiversity loss, which is like when people go, oh, I remember when we used to drive around the country, we got so many bugs on our windshields, and now I don't have any. That's because there's less bugs.
That's bad.
Less bugs is bad.
Are you sure?
Very sure, because they're key pollinators for a lot of our plants, and plants and other types of flora actually underpin most ecosystems.
Right. Bugs good. Okay.
Bugs good. We like bugs.
Whatever you say, man. There's a little spider that lives under my toilet, and I'm waiting for him to bite me one day. That's just
he lives
little...
there. Yeah, that's like does. Spiders in my house. We have a deal. I'm like, you can have the top half of the wall and the corners, but if you're out of here. If you leave your designated zones, you can't live here anymore. Under they just come toilet. Back.
The toilet spiders.
Or under your toilet, they just come back though because they know how to get in.
Oh, great, wonderful. Okay, move along.
Really good for Steph. What was I talking about?
Toilet spiders.
Oh, I was explaining the difference between biodiversity. And that, like, so the nations get together. This one was co-hosted by Kunming and Montreal. So they had an online one in the middle of the pandemic that's still hosted by China. But then because of restrictions, it was held in Montreal of December of 2022. So they come together. They talk about stuff. Anyway, let's talk about why this is currently a good initiative, the 30 by 30 initiative. All right, let's talk about why it's good.
Right.
So currently, only 15% of land and fresh waters are protected. This number varies from nation to nation. Scotland's about 18% protected. The U.S. is really well known for protecting its land areas. We have all sorts of national and state parks that do kind of just like come under that umbrella. They're managed for nature, they're protected for nature. National parks in Scotland are kind of just like an arbitrary boundary that they go, oh, we'd really like to call this a national park. So Cairngorms National Park is just a boundary line. People live within that. There's villages and all sorts of communities living within this boundary. So it becomes less about like ecological zone protected and managed for nature, and more talking about like how can we do this but also without having too much conflict with the people who live and work there, because it's not owned by the government. There's private owners own huge chunks of Cairngorms National Park.
Yeah, but aren't national parks government parks
in the States? Yes. Oh, okay. They're owned by the government. State parks are also land owned by the state. They're managed by, like, I think the Michigan's, like, Department of Natural Resources, DNR. So that's why we have that one island that's a national park. Anyway, that's why we have parks.
This is where I got thrown off earlier, because last week I was Googling something from where I grew up, and there was a famous guy with the last name Warren. And where I grew up is Warren Dunes, which is a state park. But it's named after him. So I was like, wait, did he like own this park or did the government work with? I don't. So, okay.
Yeah. Right. We can do a whole episode talking about national and state parks because they are very fascinating and have a direct link to Scotland because someone named John Muir, who is from Scotland, actually helped establish quite a lot of national parks in America. So very interesting thing. But what you should know is that like, there's about 15% of the land and water currently protected. And there are obvious benefits that are we're preserving spaces for nature, for wildlife, future generations. They're like kind of like sanctuary cities, but for nature, you know, good things. There's also the suggestion that protective areas are a natural draw for ecotourism. So like we were just talking about National Park, you can definitely attest to that. Apparently, outdoor recreation rakes in about $887 billion U.S. dollars per year.
I'm in the wrong business.
I also read that and I was like, what am I doing with my life? Like, right. I need to be doing that. Yeah. So it's also said to provide essential businesses to rural communities. So that's a lot of issues, especially here in like rural Highlands. A lot of their businesses there do rely on ecotourism, people wanting to come out and see how beautiful the landscape and scenery are. It's good for people. Also, protecting your watershed, for instance, means protecting our drinking water. So, like, those are good, like, things. For instance, like, the Great Lakes. If we protect the Great Lakes, then we're protecting 23% of the Earth's fresh water.
23%. Maybe I live in the wrong state. Like,
you live in the right state.
Well, now, until that's the only good water left and there's some war around Michigan.
Canada, I mean, yeah.
Canada comes to attack us or something.
Actually, fun fact, there's only one lake that isn't co-owned by both governments, and that is, in fact, Lake Michigan. Woo. Every other lake in the Great Lakes water basin is managed by both the U.S. government and the Canadian government.
Well, that's where Warren Dunes is, so... I was in the right place, and I need to go back, I guess.
Yeah. That's why when Nestle decided to take water from the water basin for their bottled water, they took it directly from Lake Michigan because it was the only one they could legally remove from. So, there you go.
I feel honored and appalled at the same time.
What a fun time. Sorry. Only 3% of the water on Earth is fresh, and 23 of that is in the Great Lakes water basin. It's like my favorite fact in the whole world. It's a very cool thing. Additionally, having access to these areas is a huge benefit to human health and well-being. So just like looking at a wildflower for 10 seconds is known to improve your mental health. So if you just go outside, look at a wildflower for 10 seconds, go back into your computer, you've improved your mental health. Not a lot, but you've done it.
What about fake flowers? I have lots of those right here. Can I stare at those and feel better?
I really don't feel like I should condone plastic.
It's not working. But...
It's not working. Right. Probably because we're not outside.
I don't have plastic flowers. That's for the environment.
What about these fake flowers? Anyway, so most of those benefits I've just listed are solely benefits to us, but nature doesn't exist solely for our benefit. Increased protected areas also means increased connectivity between habitats, which is far better for wildlife. Many, particularly wild plant species, suffer from habitat fragmentation without having effective ways to like physically travel. Like birds can travel between things. Other species can travel between fragmented areas. It's difficult, but it can happen. Plants will often be just kind of stuck in the spot. For instance, there is something called one-flowered wintergreen, and it is a little tiny flower, and it grows up as physically tall as it possibly can. This is how it travels, my favorite thing. And then it just tips over, and its little bulb plants its little seed in the ground, and that's as far as it can move. But that is like, it takes a year of growth to do that. So they move very slowly.
Is it aware it could have just like not grown tall and just... fell over at any time?
Some plants do like grow along the ground, like grow out instead of up, so that is a thing that they can also do. You know what, next time I'm around some, I will let them know. No them legs,
some guy from America has a thought for them.
I'll let them know. Yeah, like the reason you're dwindling from lack of genetic diversity is not because you don't have legs, it's because you're spending too much time growing upward.
Yeah, I'm falling over.
So having access to more space often means population increase for threatened species.
Pretty sure there's a pastoral allegory there somewhere that I'm going to use down the road. Some of you just need to grow up and fall over and create new worlds with your... Nope, it's not working out. Never mind, move on.
Wintergreen. You're going to think about that for the next couple of days, though.
I am. Until I find the right analogy, I'm going to keep working on it, yeah.
So by preserving these ecosystems, we stand a better chance of defending against the climate crisis. Having a shelter of protected areas allows some species room to adapt to a changing climate and other external pressures. And it also increases carbon storage potential throughout woodlands, peatlands, grasslands, etc. So there's a lot of good things that can happen for protecting them. And most of the benefits are that I've listed are just on land, and I haven't even covered marine impact yet, but I am not a marine expert. So I did what any person would do, is I went online and I looked for a marine expert, and I read their thoughts on the 30 by 30 and marine protected areas. And this is from Erin Eastwood of the National Ocean Protection Coalition. She's an American, I believe. And it says, science has shown that when well-protected marine protected areas are in place, fish and their habitats bounce back. But our ocean is more resilient in the face of future changes, and people benefit, both directly through jobs, tourism revenue, biomedical discoveries, and enhancements to fisheries, as well as indirectly where protected nearshore habitats buffer communities from bacterial pathogens, storm damage, and provide long-term carbon storage, among many other benefits. So,
a lot of words. I'm trying to sort it out still. Sorry.
Fine. Basically, marine protected areas are good. It lists this basically the same stuff for terrestrial things, and it helps communities, helps us, but it also has long-term carbon storage benefits and other things. So it is like protecting areas is good on land and in the sea.
Right. Okay. I can follow that much. Yeah, I got that.
Okay. So I have spent
to water it down, you went from this vast, lots of big words to protect things good, Jamin. Like, yay. And so
yay. It's good. It's good. There are good things.
Who's this dumb co-host on here? Protect things good. Okay. Sorry. Move.
Well, who is this co-host we have on here? Because now this is where your expertise comes in handy. I've just spent about 20-ish minutes covering background and benefits of 30 by 30. But there is some little known controversy surrounding it. The PR of 30 by 30 is so good. People are so on board with this. It is such a good thing. And I think it's our responsibility to discuss the controversy. Modern conservation often comes from a Western neocolonialist point of view, and we apply those to large areas where we have no expertise, particularly to the global south, indigenous people and local communities. So these ecosystems are often the first and hardest impacted because it's like 80% of the world's biodiversity. And so it's easy for conservationists from the global north to go there and tell everyone that they are quote unquote what they are doing wrong. So 30 by 30 has absolute potential to violate human rights and completely devastate indigenous populations. A statement from Amnesty International, Minority Rights Groups International, Rainforest Foundation UK, and Survival they had one from April 2021 and November 2022, and they outlined some of these dangers. So as Christians and conservationists, like, we cannot separate human rights from biodiversity recovery. So what does this say? Well, first of all, 30% target is being set without any assessment of social impacts and overall conservation effectiveness of a previous goal that they set in 2010 of 17%. And the 17% has led to major displacement and eviction of indigenous peoples, in addition to a wide range of human rights abuses. So let's just talk about evictions and land grabbing, because that's a big one that everyone is concerned about.
Yeah. A general principle when you're trying to do kind of social work is that you should be bringing people to the table from all different kinds of mm-hmm. walks of life or backgrounds and whatnot, so that you're not just thinking in terms of what works best for you. So, for example, right now at our church, we've been working on just brainstorming what we can do about, like, abuse, because I've had a few situations over the last year or so where I've just come into people dealing with all kinds of abuse, be it sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, mm-hmm. so on and so forth. And the work that I was starting to do was more or less like, all right, how do I contextualize these stories? I'm getting to know the people who are already in it, hearing their stories so that I can relate with those who are going through it. But then connecting with our local abuse shelter here in Jackson to ask them what they're doing and how our church could actually just participate in what they're doing so that we might see it in through others in the conversation who already know it better than we do before we reinvent the wheel or accidentally, as non-professionals on abuse, create new situations of abuse that we thought would solve it.
Right.
Instead of hearing out the wisdom that's already out there. So a lot of the people that would be affected, they're not at these tables then with these...
They have a difficult time coming to these tables quite frequently. Mm-hmm. This was a big issue at COP26, which is the climate COP, is that because it was so north and in the middle of the pandemic, it was very difficult for the world's most affected people to reach these, either due to lack of funding or travel. They couldn't get correct visas or lack of access to a vaccine. So it's very difficult for them to get to the table. And a lot of the, I mean, basically we know about like the most powerful nations in the world essentially are of the global north. So they have a lot of push and a lot of pull, and they're also some of the biggest polluters. So it's easy for them to get to the table as opposed to these groups. So that's why things like Amnesty International and minority rights groups, like those, exist to help people get to these climate and biodiversity conferences so they can make a space at the table and talk about these things. Like the issue with 30 by 30 is that 80% of like indigenous people make up like 5% of the world's population, but they protect and live among 80% of its remaining biodiversity. So they're some of the best people who know how to maintain nature and biodiversity, and we need to talk to them, and we're not. So what we're doing is going, this is a really nice piece of land. Governments are going, if I take that land and I protect it, I just take it and say, this is protected land now, nobody can live here, then I have protected a piece of chunk of land and I can add that to my target. So what they do is they grab it, like they buy up the land, or because if it's like a reserve, because it has happened on reservations in Canada from what I've heard, they'll just go, this is ours now, and then push people off of the land who've been living there and working there for generations to maintain this balance of ecosystems. And then they have nowhere to live. So they have nothing to eat, because that's how they maintain. So they have hunger, like people starve, and they have bad health now, and they have nowhere to live. So that's kind of like, that's some major human rights issues that come to play here, is they are not really, and if they're given a space at the table, it's not a very big space at the table.
Right. And that's not even like cultivating a, something new and healthy. That's just like changing your percentages to meet a math goal. Is that right?
Yeah, basically.
So that doesn't do anything. That's like a cheating workaround.
Yeah, basically like, oh, I need this much cake for this party that I'm having, but I don't want to make my own cake. But I see my neighbor has just bought a really nice cake, but I only need about half of it. So I'm just going to take half their cake.
Right.
And this is why they have less for their party, but it's fine. I have everything for my party.
Yeah. This is why laws, be it in current life right now or even in the Bible, like laws were not created to just like, I found myself in this exact situation, I just apply exactly what's written here. Like the person who's working with the law is supposed to be, what was the point behind this law? And does it make sense with the situation that I'm currently staring at?
Right.
Which is what judges are supposed to do, right? Like try to make judgment calls on what's already been written down in the situation that they're facing right that moment. So like this, like if we were to have laws built around like your nation needs percentages, this like just disrespects the entire heart behind what this whole plan is to do. If you're just not changing the environment at all, but changing your math equation. So that kind of misses the point, I think.
Yeah. I like what they're trying. I like the idea of it, but it's just such a westernized, like it's westernized point of view, as most like, because we have the most money and the biggest loudspeakers, as most conservation things tend to be, is we just go in and we're like, we know everything, we've got all this evidence, blah, blah, blah. And we absolutely like ignore like generations of people who have been doing this and maintaining it despite all of these horrible drivers of biodiversity loss.
Yeah, and it gets back to like the example that we used in our last podcast was, would it be better to not have gasoline running cars? Yes, but now you have states like working on only electric cars can be bought or purchased or driven in our state or something like that. Taking completely out of context, like the people that live in your state, if they can even afford to exist in that kind of environment anymore. And then it just becomes, if you're at the top and it works out for you and you got the money and the privilege, then great. Mm-hmm. And the rest of you, like, hey, we're trying to save the environment. Who cares about you? You know? So like, if you get caught up in that kind of thing where it's this, it's not the exact same, but a similar kind of, hey, we're trying to save the environment. So in the name of the environment, you owe us your land. Like you just, again,
exactly
missing the point.
Yeah. And like, I like the target, but it's also kind of missing the, what drives biodiversity loss. It's not like unprotected areas, it's all of these other things, like specifically climate change, just like not addressing like underlying impacts and drivers of climate change globally. Like we're very bad at that. The Glasgow Agreement was honestly not the best, and it was kind of let down compared to the major Paris COP, just I think like five years before that, so it was kind of a bummer. And it's not doing anything about land use change in a good sense, because we're taking land that's, we're like, oh, this is managed well, as opposed to taking land that isn't managed well, taking it, protecting it, managing it better.
Yep. There was something else I was, well, it's probably not a great analogy, but I think your husband would like it.
I'll let him know.
Avatar, you know, like they come in, they're interested in the exact kind of things they're looking, what is it, unobtainium or something?
Unobtainium.
A little too on the nose. Yeah. Yeah, you know, like they are just kind of, their focus is on one thing and one thing only, whereas if they would have just trusted the native terrestrials of the land, they probably could have taught them better ways to get what they were looking for, though this doesn't work out because I don't remember anything about unobtainium, but they would have figured out how to mesh with the environment and very likely find something much better than what they were able to find just out of
power. Yeah, honestly, this all comes down to capitalism, right? Like capitalism has one goal, and it's to constantly drive profit. It doesn't care about who it walks through or how it gets there. As long as those numbers go up and we're constantly like moving profit upward, they don't care. So like Avatar's a good analogy in the sense that like it didn't matter even if they had worked with the indigenous peoples of that planet, because what they were trying to get was essentially you had to destroy the planet to get it anyway, instead of just like looking at other resources, because they had drained whatever they needed on Earth of all its natural resources. So they're like, we'll get this stupidly named unobtainium. It'll fix all of our problems because we can constantly drive profit. Like, we just need to stop using capitalism as like a way to run a society.
Yeah. And I
stop
like,
it.
Stats in general, like, they're good focuses that keep us on track. Like, right now at our church, we're praying into some statistics we want. So we want to see this many people baptized, this many people saved. We want to see our finances go up so that we can thrive instead of just like scrape by. But like ultimately stats, when that's your focus, like you can get stats without goodness. You can get stats without the Holy Spirit driving it in a church. And I think there are plenty of stats that churches are reaching all over the place where it looks like, yeah, these are the successful places to go. This is what we've been looking for. This is what we want. When in fact, we use a lot of cheap tricks within the gospel to try to fabricate those stats, cheat our way to those stats, or water down what we're trying to do in attempts to reach those stats rather than let the Spirit really infuse what we're doing to get there. So in a right. strange kind of parallel, you know, when a government has stats and they say like these are good things, which they are, right. their hopes are good things, but when we use cheap ways to get there and it's not driven by our hearts but either by capitalism or whatever else, we can achieve good stats and then find out like it really had no heart behind it or anything like that. Like when I'm at a hotel and it's like, we're not doing laundry every day for you because we're trying to save the environment. I'm like, I'm pretty sure you're trying to save on your water bill is my guess. But, you know, like you right. can throw environment on there to give your stats a better yep. feel. Or the amount of times all kinds of companies just put out commercials talking about all the good things they do instead of selling whatever they're selling and attempts to actually sell themselves as good stats, you know, so. Yeah, there's a yeah. lot of cheap ways around these kinds of things.
Oh yeah, greenwashing all day. Just everybody
does. Is that the word?
Yeah, it's called greenwashing, where they're just like, oh, look at this thing we're doing, and it's actually like not
yeah.
great.
I instantly understand the word, so it's a good word.
Yeah, yeah. It's not good at all.
Well, yeah, but I get the word, so it's a good word.
It's a good word. Another thing about the 30 by 30 target, specifically after the Kunming Global Biodiversity Framework, is that it has no clarity on whether human rights are covered under its equitable governance and rights elements. So first, let me tell you what's the outcome. So the outcome is that after all of these concerns, the Kunming Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework has 23 targets, and the third one is addressing 30 by 30 specifically. So I will just read it to you. I have it up here. Let me tell you, it was actually very difficult to find the full framework online, and I am a good Googler. So it essentially says that we ensure and enable that by 2030, at least 30% of terrestrial, inland water, and coastal marine areas, especially areas of particular importance for biodiversity and ecosystem functions and services, are effectively conserved and managed through ecologically representative, well-connected, equitably governed systems of protected areas and other effective-based conservation measures, recognizing indigenous and traditional territories where applicable and integrated into wider landscapes, seascapes, oceans, while ensuring that any sustainable use where appropriate in such areas is fully consistent with conservation outcomes, recognizing and respecting the rights of indigenous peoples and local communities, including over their traditional territories. So it has been formally recognized in the target. And I had friends who were there and they said it was quite a fight to get indigenous peoples and local communities to be recognized within that target 3. So, good things.
Yeah. Isn't that always a fight for some reason?
It's weird that it's a fight for just to have minority groups and underrepresented people to be properly represented. And it's not even, but that's the point where it's like there's no clarity under whether human rights are covered under the word equitable governments and rights elements. Like it just kind of says that, and there's no like legal definition of it within the framework. So it's hard to tell.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when they're not present and not able to give you the conviction that you need, you can pretty much define yeah. it however you want by your own standards in the end.
I will say, I will say when I was at COP26, again, this is the climate COP, the most powerful messaging that I ever got while I was there was absolutely from people from the Global South, youth organizations, and indigenous peoples and local communities, because they have the right message. They know what needs to be done and they don't mess around with it. They're absolutely directed to the point. And like we need to uplift, like, as conservationists in a global community, we need to uplift what they're saying more and lift those voices and not like speak for them. Obviously, we're two white people from the West on a podcast saying, hey, we got to do this.
Leave us out of this, Aaron.
But like when we're in those situations, instead of saying, hey, this is what they say, bring them, like help bring them to the table. I obviously did not do that today, but we should be doing that.
Yeah. Well, you're at least voicing the concerns for now. And
yeah,
maybe we'll have someone featured in the future. Who knows? This is the same thing hopefully with some of the boards that I work on, or even in our conference of churches, we've realized like, hey, our diversity sucks. We got to fix this. So like there's intentionality behind really paying attention to the gender and diversity of new pastors that we're appointing into places so that we put our money where our mouth is or whatever.
It's equally as important as saying like we need to bring these people, but also when you say, why aren't they coming here? Like what is preventing them from coming to this table? Like when you ask like, oh, can they make it? Well, no, actually there's a number of reasons why they can't. Mm. So like communities need to go, okay, this is why they can't. How can we help them get to places where they can be heard? So yeah, I imagine you're having similar conversations about diversity instead of like, how can we get them here? Like, what are we doing that's preventing them from wanting to come?
Yep. Yeah. So. No, I'm on a social justice action team for our conference right now. And those are the kinds
exciting
of questions that need to be addressed in order for us to figure out how to serve the very people that we're talking about. So yep. I get it.
I always find it so interesting, like every time we talk about concepts, like either in advocacy or just regular conservation, it's all tied together. Like social justice is tied to saving our planet, and you cannot ignore the two, and like you can't separate it. That's the only way we're going to fight against climate change. The only way we're going to fight against equality of peoples. Like we just can't separate the two. That's just life.
Yep. And you could probably pause this podcast for a moment and do something spiritual. Think to yourself, what if the world was perfect tomorrow through force? And we got exactly what we were looking for environmentally. What did we lose in that moment?
You lost me at through force, but...
Well, if you wanted it to be perfect tomorrow, there would have to be a lot of forceful decisions made as to what can and can't happen anymore. And who all would be affected by that?
Man. I actually went to a very, gosh, I wish I could remember her name. If I remember it, I'll send it to you. But I went to a very interesting webinar in the middle of the pandemic, because of course we all did. We had nothing. We couldn't leave our homes. Where a woman who works in the States on the Great Prairie was discussing how essential winter is in order to revitalize your spirit. She's like, the earth has a winter so she can store her energy and grow into the spring, and we stopped giving ourselves a winter. Essentially, with the Industrial Revolution, we were just like constantly, we need to go, we need to go, we need to go, we need to go. And she was just like, their renewable energy is a good thing, but you're not giving the planet a winter. We're just trying to stave off what we're doing. So we need to like rest the planet. And I've just thought about it constantly since, like, we need rest, the planet needs rest, and we're trying to fix the planet without resting the planet. And it, like, I don't know about you, if you're really tired and strung out and you're just like, I'll just take these coffees, it's fine. Like, that's essentially what it feels like.
This explains all of the Florida Man articles in existence. They just don't have winter, the poor people. They've gone crazy.
So hot, yeah. So hot. I don't have time to talk about Florida. Like, we don't have time to unpack that today, James.
No, that's a whole podcast itself.
Wow. Anyway, yeah, I just really want to talk about 30 by 30 initiative because it is good. There are good things about it, but we cannot ignore the voices asking for to be heard. So,
yeah. Make sure everybody has a seat at your table. I think that's the takeaway.
Yes.
Maybe absolutely. Even the name of the episode. Who knows? You do because you're ooh listening to it now. And it has a title.
We don't.
But we don't.
We haven't titled it yet.
Right. All right. Well, anything else on this that you wanted to get into or?
Nope.
Nope. Okay. All right. Well, that brings us to... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I said that was my 3 pages of notes that I covered today.
Excellent. Well, that's another return of the Revenge of the Air Environment podcast sequels. We'll be back with more, but for now, we hope that you're starting to see, after all the different episodes you've listened to, or maybe this is the first one, that justice, social justice, environmental justice, they all kind of get put into each other. Because when you're talking about one form of justice, you're talking about all forms of justice. Exactly. And myself as a pastor, when I believe that God is the definition of justice, that's part of the reason that I'm always trying to theologically figure out what justice looks like to him so that all the little pieces come together as one kind of thing. So we'll continue to sort through that as these two white people have future conversations.
No getting around it.
But in the meantime, let us know your thoughts. Leave a comment. Leave some stars. Leave something else. Whatever.
Some love.
And we will catch you next time on the Air Environment.